tut, tut, tut. I already sense that in your false, but according to you, real consciousness, there are beginning to be agitated like blinded flies, all kinds of data bequeathed to you by heredity from your uncle and mother, the totality of which always and in everything engenders in you the really touching impulse of curiosity. In this instance, to find out as quickly as possible why I, a mere novice at writing, whose name has not even once been mentioned in the newspapers, have suddenly become unique. Never mind. I personally am very pleased to see this curiosity arise in you, even though only in your false consciousness. As I know from experience that this impulse, unworthy of man, can sometimes change its nature and become a worthy impulse called the desire for knowledge, which in its turn helps a contemporary man to perceive and even to understand more clearly the essence of any subject on which his attention happens to be concentrated. And therefore, I am willing and even glad to satisfy this curiosity that has arisen in you. So listen and try to justify and not disappoint my expectations. This original personality of mine, already sniffed out by certain individuals from both choirs of the judgment seat above, whence objective justice proceeds, and also here on earth by an as yet very limited number of people, is based, as I have already said, on three specific data formed in me at different times during my preparatory age. The first of these three data, from the moment of its arising, became, as it were, the chief directing lever of my entire whole, while the other two became the vivifying sources for the nourishing and perfecting of the first. This first datum arose in me when I was still, as is said, a chubby mite. My dear, now deceased grandmother was then still alive and was 100 and some years old. When my grandmother, may she attain the kingdom of heaven, was dying, my mother, as was then the custom, took me to her bedside. And as I kissed her right hand, my dear grandmother placed her dying left hand on my head and said, in a whisper yet very distinctly, "Eldest of my grandsons, listen and always remember my strict injunction to you. In life, never do as others do." Having said this, she gazed at the bridge of my nose, and evidently noticing my perplexity and my obscure understanding of what she had said, added somewhat angrily and imperiously, "Either do nothing, just go to school, or do something nobody else does." Whereupon she immediately, without hesitation and with a perceptible impulse of disdain for all around her, and with commendable self-cognizance, gave up her soul directly into the hands of his faithfulness, the Archangel Gabriel. I think it will be interesting and perhaps even instructive for you to know that all this made so powerful an impression on me that I was suddenly unable to endure anyone around me, and as soon as we left the room where the mortal planetary body of the cause of my arising lay, I very quietly, trying not to attract attention, stole away to the bin where, during Lent, the bran and potato peelings were stored for our sanitarians, that is to say, our pigs. And I lay there without food or drink, in a tempest of whirling and confused thoughts, of which, fortunately for me, I still had only a very limited number in my childish brain, right until my mother's return from the cemetery, when her weeping, as she searched for me in vain, roused me from my daze. At once I climbed out of the bin and stood a moment on the edge, for some reason or other, with hands outstretched. Then I ran to her and, clinging fast to her skirts, involuntarily began to stamp my feet and, why I don't know, to imitate the braying of the donkey that belonged to our neighbor, the bailiff. Why all this produced such a strong impression on me just then, and why I almost automatically behaved so strangely, I still cannot make out, though during recent years, particularly on the days known as Shrovetide, I have pondered over it a great deal, trying to discover the reason. I have only reached the logical supposition that it was because the room where this sacred scene occurred, which was to have tremendous significance for the whole of my future life, was permeated through and through with the scent of a special incense brought from a monastery of Mount Athos and very popular among followers of every shade of belief of the Christian religion. Whatever it may have been, these are the facts. During the days following this event, nothing particular happened in my general state, unless it was that I walked more often than usual with my feet in the air, but that is to say, on my hands. My first act that was obviously not in accord with the manifestations of others, though without the participation either of my consciousness or my subconscious, occurred on exactly the 40th day after my grandmother's death, when our family, our relatives, and all those who had esteemed my dear grandmother, who was loved by everybody, were gathered in the cemetery, as was the custom, to perform over her mortal remains, reposing in the grave, what is called the Requiem service. Suddenly, without rhyme or reason, instead of observing what was conventional among people of all degrees of tangible and intangible morality and of every station in life, that is, instead of standing quietly as if overwhelmed with an expression of grief on one's face, and even if possible with tears in one's eyes, I started skipping and dancing around the grave and sang, "May she glory now behold, little woman all in gold, ha, ha, ha. May she glory now behold, little woman all in gold," and so forth and so on. And from this moment on, as regards any form of aping, that is, imitating the habitual automatized manifestations of those around me, a something always arose in my presence, engendering what I should now call an irresistible urge to do things not as others do. At that age, for example, I did such things as the following. When my brothers, sisters, and the neighbors' children who came to play with us were learning to catch a ball only with the right hand and throw it in the air, I would first bounce the ball hard on the ground, and when it rebounded, after first doing a somersault, would catch it, but only with the thumb and middle finger of the left hand. Or if all the other children slid down the hill head first, I would try to do it, and moreover better and better each time, backside first. Or, if we were given various kinds of Abrahamian pastries, the others, before putting them into their mouths, would first of all lick them, evidently to try their flavor and prolong the pleasure, I would first sniff on all sides, and perhaps even put it to my ear and listen intently. And then, almost unconsciously, though very seriously, I would mutter to myself, "Enough is enough. You don't need to stuff." And humming to an appropriate rhythm would swallow it whole without savoring it. And so on, and so forth.